dead sums and no return. Yeah, it's only gonna take about a minute or so till the factories blot the sun out, and you're gonna have to turn your lights on just to see. And them lights are gonna be neon, saying fly our jets to paradise, and the whole damn world's gonna be made of styrene.
Listen well, my brothers, when you hear the night wind sigh, and you see the wagons flying through the great polluted sky, there won't be no country music, there won't be no rock and roll, cause when they take away our country, they'll take away our soul.
To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Joel Skousen is coming up in a moment. Joel Skousen is the publisher and principal author of the World Affairs Brief, a weekly news analysis service on the web. He is a political scientist by training, specialist in projecting future threats relative to war and terrorism, exactly what we've been talking about. The author of several books concerning security measures individuals can take, like all of you out there. You know, like getting under your desk and putting your hands over the back of your neck. I'm just kidding. To protect themselves against the threat of terrorism and other security issues. I guess I'll never forget that. I'll never forget it. They are Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, the secure home and how to implement a high security shelter in the home. He has traveled extensively throughout the world, speaks several foreign languages, very talented, an advisor to emerging political parties in Central America, and has a great deal of understanding about how the world actually works politically and behind the scenes. In a moment, Joel Skousen. Just like they do in football games, I'd like to welcome the audience here on the West Coast who has now seen the day of destruction. Actually, you've only seen half of the day of destruction, right? Welcome in. Joel would have no idea what I'm talking about. He doesn't watch TV or doesn't have one, doesn't even have a radio, he said, when I talked to him just a moment before the program. So he didn't get an opportunity to hear the first hour. Here is Joel Skousen. Joel, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Art. Nice to be with you again.
Good. Glad to have you. Anyway, Joel, let's start off with something that sort of dominated the weekend, and I think you have some differences with it, if I heard you correctly, and that is this man who went on 60 Minutes earlier tonight. He just left the CIA on Friday. He's a guy who had been in charge of the CIA's office to get and kill bin Laden and keep track of bin Laden and all that kind of thing, and he went on 60 Minutes and said some pretty scary stuff. Now, perhaps some would say he's a bit of a loose cannon, probably the CIA is saying that, actually. And some would say he's wrong, anyway, what do you say?
Well, first of all, from my understanding and knowledge of the inside workings of the CIA, no one is allowed to go public from a CIA position that he's been in, even after he's left the CIA. They have a permanent contractual agreement of silence of any classified information. This would be considered highly classified, and so, as is the case in many instances where we have what appears to be a whistleblower within the CIA, this is a potential purposeful leak done under circumstances that make it appear as if it's going against CIA wishes, but I'm not convinced we can do that.
You have a very good point. I hadn't considered that. Not in a million years would this normally happen unless the CIA intended it to happen. And, let's see, if they didn't want him to talk, he probably wouldn't have been talking, would he?
That's precisely correct.
That's an awfully good point.
They have stopped numerous people from publishing, speaking in public with veritable threats on their lives.
Sure, and, one way or the other, yeah.
Right. So there's no way he's going out and publishing, getting on 60 Minutes unless he's a permitted leaker.
Huh. All right. Let's think about that a little bit. A permitted leaker. What would be the motive, just sticking with this line of thought, what would be the motive for allowing him to say what he said?
Well, this has to do with the overall picture of whether or not Al-Qaeda is a credible threat and Osama bin Laden. You know, we don't know anything about Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden except from one source, and this makes it very suspicious. That source is the United States government. Virtually everything that comes out, every attribution that someone arrested has links to Al-Qaeda comes from a U.S. government spokesman. We have no independent information whatsoever, and there are many anomalies.
That's true.
There's many anomalies, Art, about Al-Qaeda which cannot be explained by normal terrorism.
All right, what kind of anomalies?
Well, for example, the government claims that Al-Qaeda is the biggest and most powerful terrorist organization in the world. And yet we have not seen any small, numerous, normal acts of terrorism in the U.S. since 9/11, despite nearly open borders. We have had no bombings of electrical pylons in the hinterland, which are totally undefended. We have no car bombings, no suicide bombings. We have nothing. And how difficult is it for someone to get across the border? It's virtually you walk across in any number of places in the United States.
So are you saying the lack of any attack since 9/11 indicates that they cannot do it?
No, I'm saying it's either they are completely impotent, in which case they can't be the largest, most well-funded terrorist organization in the world. I mean, even illegal aliens from Mexico without a dime to their name can walk across the border. So
it's true.
You know, not a matter of relative impotence. What this tends to indicate is that we are dealing here with something that perhaps is being blown out of proportion by government in order to induce people to continue to believe in a war on terrorism, which may not be exactly to the degree of danger that people are being used to, support some of the government legislative and legal proposals to restrict constitutional liberties.
Joel, why do you think we invaded Iraq?
Well, it certainly wasn't because of weapons of mass destruction.
Apparently not.
And there's a lot of other anomalies there about the reasons. For example, I happen to know, because I've had several military people describe to me what they knew, that the United States government had satellite photos of large convoys of weapons leaving Iraq for Syria. They knew that there were Russian officers directing that operation. They used a lot of Russian trucks, and yet Russia is being considered our ally in the war on terrorism. The U.S. knew that the weapons were leaving beforehand. In fact, it was on the briefing page of Secretary of State Colin Powell when he went before the U.N., and they pulled it at the last moment.
So you're saying that the weapons were there?
There were weapons there, but they were gone before we invaded.
Well,
the U.S.
All right. I need to try and understand this. If you were Saddam Hussein and you were about to face off with the U.S., stupid as that might be, why would you take your ace of spades and toss it out of the deck? Joel?
I think it might have to do with knowing that your time is up and deferring the ability to strike at Israel or the United States or anyone who might be a threat, to defer that by giving it to another ally, which Syria is. And the U.S. is still holding back on its revelations about Syria. Some of this has leaked out in the press, but the U.S. isn't making an issue of it.
That just doesn't make sense to me, Joel. I mean, if you know the big bad U.S. is coming at you and you've got a nasty, nasty weapon, chemical or atomic or biologic or whatever, you just don't throw that card away. I mean, it's suicide anyway to go up against the U.S., but if you've got some terrible weapon, then you use it.
Well, he apparently chose not to. I mean, I can't second guess, but I'll tell you, those weapons still exist, and they'll still probably be used. But the bigger question, Art, is that the United States knew this and withheld it from the American public.
Why withhold the fact that the weapons are being transferred out of Iraq into Syria? Why withhold
that? It's very obvious from other information coming out of this administration that it already decided to go to war in Iraq long before this preparations were being made.
Joel, let's look at it another way. The administration went through a terrible, terrible embarrassment, virtually having to say, well, there were no weapons of mass destruction. If I recall correctly, they said it was faulty intelligence. The British Prime Minister had to apologize for it, for God's sake. So you would think the U.S. would now be screaming, well, we couldn't tell you before, but we can tell you now. They did have them, but they were sent to Iraq. I mean, why would they be
sent to Syria?
They were sent to Syria. Why wouldn't they be screaming that in that moment of rather than go through that giant embarrassment?
Well, it's hard to second guess a government that isn't telling the truth to us. But what I can assume is that there would be a public expectation then that if the weapons went to Syria, that you'd go after Syria. And I don't think they're ready to do that. I think they went into Iraq for ulterior motives, and they obviously wanted to have, I think strategically, an aircraft carrier on the sand, so to speak, in the middle of the Middle Eastern cauldron of affairs, which is much more economical in terms of managing what they know is coming up as a next Middle East war. It's going to be a big war against Israel with a lot of missiles that Syria and Egypt and Iran are planning to launch at Israel in salvo so that the Arrow anti-missile system cannot intercept that many missiles. I think the U.S. wants to be there and in position. And I think that's the reason they went into Iraq. Saddam Hussein, I think, may have had knowledge of that, tried to defuse the situation by getting his weapons out, possibly to embarrass the United States. But I think because the United States is not ready to go in and attack and cleanse Syria, that they're keeping this thing under their hat.
Well, I don't know if I can buy that, Joel.
Well,
it just doesn't make common sense. Again, if you've got the weapons, you use them. If the U.S. had knowledge that they were transferred out secretly, certainly it wouldn't suffer through that embarrassment of our intelligence was no good, and there are no weapons of mass destruction. I mean, it just, the whole thing, it doesn't make common sense. Maybe it makes sense in some way you can explain.
Well, I don't feel an obligation to have to come up with an explanation when neither Saddam Hussein nor the U.S. government is telling why they did what they did. All I know is I'm reporting to you the facts on the ground that have been confirmed by military experts.
Okay.
I'm just saying those are the facts. I don't have a perfect explanation. I've given you what I think may be a possible one, but I just can't say for sure because they aren't talking.
All right.
They're the ones who did it.
All right. What, for example, with regard to the intelligence of the weapons being moved into Syria, where do those reports come from?
Well, they come from actual U.S. intelligence people who, first of all, the government itself circulated those reports fairly openly within the Pentagon. So there were plenty of rooms for leaks, but there were sufficient satellite photos. I had Marine Corps contacts who saw the photos. There were also Army contacts that saw the photos. And there's just been a new MI6 report come out of Britain that the British knew, and they knew of the Russian connection as well, and that's just been reported this last week, that the Russians were involved in the loading of those weapons, because the Russians are very much into Syria. They were in Iraq just prior to the war, and some of their advisors were there during the war, and they got out quickly so that they weren't found by U.S. personnel. But just like in the original Gulf War, you know, the Russians were flying in daily resupply to Iraq at the same time that the United States was crowing to the world that the Russians were on board as our allies. The U.S. has a very nasty habit of covering for the Russians that I don't quite understand.
I don't either. I certainly don't either. The Cold War is over. The Russians are supposedly, well, I don't know, supposedly they're our friends, right?
Well, that's the problem, is that my information indicates that the Russians are still the worst proliferators of weapons of mass destruction. They are the most voluminous builders of weapons of mass destruction as we speak, And yet we make mountains out of molehills about Iraq. Russia and China, in my estimation, are the real axis of evil.
Iran, Russia, and China?
Well, Iran is a surrogate of both Russia and China.
How do you react to the news that Iran notified the UN nuclear watchdog people in writing Sunday that it's going to suspend all of its uranium enrichment and related stuff?
I don't believe it for a moment.
You don't?
Any more than North Korea saying that they've given up their nuclear program, which they said they did, and they carried it on in caves. And the U.S. apparently knew about it, didn't blow the whistle on them. And there's a lot of surrogates that are preparing. And China itself is acting as a surrogate for Russia to take the heat off of Russia so that Russia can play this role of feigning weakness, and we're an ally of the United States. China's moved into Latin America as the main supplier of arms. It's taken over some of the main bases in Cuba. It's into the Bahamas. It's into, of course, Pakistan, and it's into Iran. It's got connections with Israel, and those connections are linked to U.S. shipments of military technology using Israel as a surrogate. So there's an awful lot that goes on in the world that isn't according to the mainstream news media.
The way we're told. So you think that our government is lying to us about the size and the danger and the threat of Al-Qaeda?
That's right, as well as Russia and their ultimate threat to us.
Why are they lying to us about that?
Well, these are really tough questions, Art.
But if you're going to make a statement like that, then it seems to me that the tough questions need to be answered.
Yeah. I agree. I'm just saying that it's one thing to be able to determine that someone's lying to you, to determine why they're lying is another thing. I can only, theorize. One of the primary theories that I think has some validity is that there is a movement among certain sectors within the power structure of the United States to get us into a global government, and war has often been used, conflict, managing both sides of the conflict in a Hegelian type dialectic has been used to get Americans, to get British, to get people to do things they wouldn't ordinarily do. We look at the provocations of the Germans in burning down their own parliament building, blaming it on the communists in order to pass a law outlawing communism and giving near absolute power to the Chancellor Adolf Hitler. That was a definite agent provocateur event. It's not new in history. There's much indication from the book Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett that Roosevelt did the same thing with Pearl Harbor, knew it was coming, fomented conflict with the Japanese in order to draw us into war. So these are not new. There may be some of that going on.
Well, I never bought the Roosevelt thing either. So I suppose I'm consistent at least. And you and I have different views, but that's quite quite all right. So you think then Al-Qaeda is what? I mean, after all, the way I've seen it covered in the Islamic world, it seems like Osama bin Laden is a hero.
That can be whether or not he's real or alive or dead. He can be a hero. This is a man that's living on legends right now. And unfortunately, there's a history of disinformation in this field. It's just like in the battle going on in Iraq against the insurgents, the constant charge that Zarqawi, a lieutenant of Osama bin Laden, apparently is running the war there, and yet whether it's in Fallujah or Najaf, insight has indicated they never have seen Zarqawi. The recordings of supposed tape recordings of his voice don't have a Jordanian accent. It can't be Zarqawi. So somebody's imitating this guy, and the U.S. is the one who's been promulgating most of those charges. So it gives me pause and suspicion that we've got disinformation floating around for political purposes.
So you hardly then believe anything you hear from our government?
Relative to the war on terrorism, I treat everything that they say with skepticism. I mean, look at the, we've been in yellow alert since 9/11. We've gone to orange alert three or four times.
Yes.
There's been, you know, almost two dozen major terrorist alerts, and virtually none of them have come true. Virtually none, Art. I mean, that's a very, very bad track record. The American people were getting skeptical. I'm afraid that something is going to happen in the world of terrorism to make the U.S. government credible. Otherwise, they're going to continue to lose credibility. That's a very bad track record for a supposed improved intelligence agent.
Well, the track record of assessing the communist threat in the old Soviet Union during the Cold War was also blown up a little bit, wasn't it, Joel? Listen, hold on to your answer to that one. We'll be back in a moment. From the high desert in the middle of the night, my guest is Joel Skousen. We're talking about terrorism. I'm Art Bell.
Sweet dreams are made of the end, so who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to
talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. My guest is Joel Skousen, and I have a feeling that Thomas from Vancouver, Canada, who fast blasts the following, agrees with him. I think the government is lying about Osama, terrorist threats, nukes, 9/11, the whole thing. Because they need something that people will fear. And fear is a powerful tool to control citizens. Before, it was Russia. Now, it's terror. I would think that Joel probably agrees with that assessment. We'll be right back. That's actually perfect. Joel, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Art.
Listen, I was saying, I think, or asking you, it was fairly widely thought after the end, substantially after the end of the Cold War, that the original assessment of the communist capability was, over the years, far overblown, causing us to spend a whole lot of money on national defense that perhaps we didn't have to spend, that was really well overdone. The intel was overcooked, as it were. Do you think that's true or false?
Some true, some false, Art. I've covered some of this in the World Affairs Brief. In short, what the answer is, quantitatively, in terms of conventional weapons, the Russians were every bit as strong as our assessment indicated they were. Qualitative-wise, in terms of technology, they were far deficient. For example, in the MiG-25 Fox Bat was finally flown over by a defector. We found out that it had some very rudimentary electronics in it, mm-hmm. far beyond 10 years, at least, behind the U.S. factor.
Mm-hmm.
Even considering that some of that was put in there for because they didn't have EMP-hardened chips. They used vacuum tubes and other things. Nevertheless, it still was pretty backwards. However, what's happened since the apparent demise of the Soviet Union, and that's still the best evidence, is that they actually cooked up their own demise in order to continue to get or to increase or facilitate the technological transfers to Russia from the United States, which has happened. We've had so many joint projects. A lot of Americans don't know that the joint strike fighters being developed jointly with Zvezda Strela, the Russians' weapons lab, which means they're getting all of Boeing's and Lockheed's technology, and that's found their way into their latest fighters as well. They feigned not having enough money to do their space station portion and got all of our technology transfer. When we decided to build it for them in their lab facilities at our expense, so there's been a lot of...
So you're saying the technology they couldn't get during the Cold War, they've readily put their hands on since.
That's right. And that's one of the problematic things. The Clinton administration, of course, was very easy on China in allowing them to get a lot of technological transfers that allowed them to have greater accuracy in their missiles. But going back to the Cold War, it's very important to understand that even though the technology of some of their mid-range weaponry was...
Mediocre,
nevertheless, their missiles were not, thanks to Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon selling to Russia the ball-bearing, miniature ball-bearing technology, allowing them to accuratize and MIRV their warheads. They really did provide every bit as much punch in terms of their missiles that we were afraid of. So that part is the most important part of the equation. The rest is relatively a matter of how they fight the war after they've nuked us.
Did you hear the little thing I read from Thomas in Canada? The government is lying about Osama, terrorist threats, nukes, 9/11.
Yes, I did.
Support, because they need to put fear into the people. Are you in general agreement with that?
I am. I think that there is a use of fear, and the entire war on terror is nothing greater than the anomalies in the way that they scrutinize people at the airports. It's not an effective way, and we still have huge holes. And of course, we have massive holes in our border, which pales in comparison to, or the airline problem pales in comparison to how many terrorists can walk across the border with loads of explosives.
You mentioned Roosevelt and the attack on Pearl Harbor. You have mentioned that you think our government's lying to us about Al-Qaeda and the whole business. Let's test it a little further. Do you think the government lied to us about 9/11?
I certainly think that they're withholding some crucial pieces of information, and we have to ask why. For example, that ad that ran before this latest session talked about the 9/11 anomalies. There are some huge ones that the U.S. could easily uncover and explain to the public. For example, on the Pentagon crash, which has tremendous anomalies, they confiscated two videos which showed the crash, and they've refused to make them public. You know, if it really is according to the government's version, I mean, why not just let us see the videos? There was
a lot of people contend that a plane did not hit the Pentagon. Are you one of those?
No. Something obviously went in and crashed into the Pentagon. I think it's very problematic that the Boeing did that kind of damage. The Boeing was clearly there. There's too many witnesses that saw it, but there was also a C-130 chasing it. There was also a four-engine airliner that the BBC had video footage of the next day, and they showed it. I saw it of an aircraft doing vertical dives in the same vicinity, and it wasn't a Boeing 757. It had four engines. You can clearly see it on the video.
Okay. It seems to me it's hard to be a little bit pregnant on this issue. I mean, you either think the U.S. Orchestrated this, if not ordered it, which a lot of people think. I'm not one of them, but a lot of people think that. So you kind of either lean in that direction, or you have to recognize that it was a perfectly executed terrorist act that came off virtually flawlessly. And that's quite a bit, you know, for an organization that you say ain't much. So it's like one or the other. And you
I mean, that's exactly the anomaly I'm working with, Art. I mean, if they could pull off that kind of precision with people who couldn't even fly a Cessna aircraft and who can't penetrate the borders and do the most minimal normal terrorist act, that's a contradiction that I can't...
Well, what road does it lead you down, Joel?
Well, it leads me down the road that there seems to be, at best, as I talked to George Norrie on Coast to Coast last year, I said it seems to be at best that there was some facilitation, some looking the other way. For example, one of the biggest anomalies of the...
You mean just like Roosevelt? They saw it coming, and they said, meaning they, our government, said, okay, we need this to scare the hell out of everybody, so we're going to let it happen. Is that what you're saying?
That's a possibility. Now, let me tell you, I mean, one of the biggest pieces of evidence that simply cannot be explained by the events is the large pools of molten metal in the bottom of the ruins of the World Trade Center.
Yes.
I mean, there's only one way you get those huge pools of metal, and that is you use thermite burning charges inside the huge 42-inch or square pillars that are in the bottom of the Trade Center. That didn't happen with airplanes. Somebody had to pack those with charges. The building was shut down the week before for major maintenance. Whole sections of the buildings were cleared out.
Okay, then there's only two possibilities, Joel. One is that Al-Qaeda was even smarter and more adept and more infiltrated by a giant margin than we even imagine when we're talking about 9/11 as we understand it, right?
Right.
They have to be to achieve what you're talking
exactly.
about. Or,
exactly.
Or, Joel... It was an inside job.
Yeah. It has to be one or the other. And I'm just saying that I can't believe Al-Qaeda can do that kind of sophistication, and they can't do anything more with open borders. I mean, it's just too big of a contradiction. So
well,
I'm leaning,
well,
leaning in the other direction.
Leaning. But this is one where I don't know how you can be a little bit pregnant. Either you think that we were in on this, that it was some sort of inside job, that we knew about it and let it happen, something that awful. I refuse to believe something that awful, but, you know, I know that opinion is out there, and it sounds to me like you're leaning toward that.
Well, you know, I try to be an objective researcher on these things, Art. Let me tell you, it's almost like the JFK assassination. The longer time goes by, the more people come out of the woodwork and say, look, I was carrying the photographs of JFK's autopsy when the wife in the casket came in the... front of Bethesda Naval Hospital. He was already in our hospital when that casket came in. Now, those are the kinds of evidences that say, wow, the government's just plain lying to us. And the longer we go through this, the more evidence comes out that the government's lying. And
I have no illusions, Joel, that our government does lie to us. And I have no illusions. I know we are propagandized. However, I haven't taken that leap, that Roosevelt leap, or that 9/11 leap that a lot of people have taken. I just, I think that what happened on 9/11 is what seemed like it happened. They crashed airplanes into these buildings. I mean, clearly the airplanes did crash into buildings. We have lots of video of that.
Sure.
But you're saying there's so much more.
Yeah, we know that there were hijackers. For example, you know, even though the FAA has got a gag order on it. It did not release the tape recordings of the pilots talking to the ATC centers. We have a private airliner who was recording their own airliner's conversation with Cleveland Center as they were discussing the hijacking of Flight 93 that crashed in Pennsylvania. So we have the recording of the pilot of Flight 93 pressing the wrong button and telling the passengers, he was actually talking to the whole world at Cleveland Center, that there's a bomb on board for the passengers to prepare for it. And we have also a lot of expletives and shouting and yelling coming out over the microphone. We also have one of the aircraft who saw the plane explode in the air. Now, that's right there. Cleveland Center knew that. That was never told to the 9/11 Commission. That means the government had told them not to tell. Why would the government do that?
Do you believe the 9/11 Commission report in its finality was a complete whitewash of what happened?
I think it was about a 50 to 60% whitewash. It did tell many correct things, but it carefully omitted the weightier evidence that would point to the things the government needs to tell us about that they aren't, like vectoring the F-16s to Flight 93 and shooting it down. I mean, New Hampshire air traffic controller testified that he vectored them to. We knew there were F-16s there. The engine was found 6 miles from the crash site.
Well, there were two stories. One story was the heroics of the passengers of Flight 93, and the other story, told more quietly behind the scenes, is that it was shot down. You're saying it was shot down?
Absolutely. And, you know, the eyewitnesses of airliners seeing with their naked eye Flight 93 explode in the air indicate that it did not end in a crash in the field in Pennsylvania.
If you shot down Flight 93, why not say so?
That's what I don't know. I mean, as I say, I'm telling the facts on the ground. I can't speak for a government that's lying to me.
I'm just speculating. Don't you think the American people would understand that an airliner headed toward the White House, in all probability, would be shot down if they could do it?
Yes.
And so therefore the American people would understand if the American government said, we shot down Flight 93?
Sure. I agree with that. But look at TW-800. The evidence points to a missile chute gone awry, and yet the government covered it up, denied that the Navy was even there, and spent $2 million manufacturing a phony video about a fuel tank explosion. But I'm a Navy pilot. I know what a trail of a drone looks like, and two witnesses saw a drone go horizontally over Long Island that had the telltale white smoke trail, and it's very easy for a drone that's passing underneath an airliner, if you've got a missile going up,
okay,
tracking the drone, that it can switch lock on to airliner.
All right, Joel, let me try this. If the goal of our government is to lie to us and to put fear into us so that they may pass Patriot Act 2, 3, and 4, in other words, tighten down the screws on the citizens, right? Am I right?
Yes.
If that's the case, then why go to the trouble to say it was a fuel tank explosion with Flight 800? Why not say it was a godforsaken, awful act of terrorism, and that would fit right into your agenda of lying and scaring the people, wouldn't it?
It would have. In fact, they would have had an excuse because there were lots of Stinger missiles that are floating around, some at least 2,000 of them.
Joel, I'm trying to look at, you know, motives here, and on the one hand, you're telling me that that's kind of what they want us to feel is fear. It would have been so easy to say, well, yes, those were photographs of a missile. Some bastard shot down Flight 800, and that would have put the fear of God in people, would have served the agenda you say that they have. So, but instead, they do the exact opposite thing and go out of their way to say, no, it was a fuel tank explosion, totally innocent from a terrorism point of view.
Now, you have to remember that this was several years before. Agendas do change.
Uh-huh.
They may have simply been trying to protect the Clinton administration from embarrassment of having a Navy missile chute go awry. I mean, that's a tremendously...
So you think it was a naval misaction, as it were.
Yes. I'm not one of those that thinks it was a terrorist act.
Uh-huh.
I think the Navy was having a missile chute. I mean, that's been admitted now. There were large Navy vessels there. There were submarines that were shooting Tomahawk missiles. And at any rate, there was a drone flying over Long Island out to the warning area, and there was a missile chute going on. So I think it was the missile chute that went awry, not an act of terrorism.
Well, gee. So in other words, you've got to end up lying about it anyway. So why not blame it on a terrorist?
Certainly, in hindsight, we can say that. But you know, in the heat of a crisis, when these people make decisions and they start down a certain direction, sometimes the inertia continues to carry them in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the people that we think are in charge of the American government, namely President Bush and those who serve for President Bush, that they're actually working against our best interests, and instead they're in league with some greater eventual world dominating body or government, some secret society? Or do you think they're dupes of a secret society, or what?
Well, it depends on who we're talking about.
How about the president?
Well, the president, I think, is a script reader, frankly.
A script reader.
I think he has basic conservative values in terms of his gut feelings, but some of my subscribers were working in the same building before he became governor. He never read a newspaper. He was never interested in world affairs. This is a person who was thrust by the establishment into the limelight because he could read a script, and because he had the Bush name, he had a winnable name. You know, the same thing to a certain extent, although there's a difference, I think, in levels of quotient of intelligence and sharpness. Bill Clinton came out of nowhere and suddenly became the front runner for the presidential candidacy in 1990 because the media simply said so.
Bill Clinton actually was a much better script reader than George Bush. I wouldn't think he'd be hired on his script reading ability. He kind of stumbles through a lot of stuff. He's not that good at it.
Well, but he's better than Bush. I mean, Bush, once he gets off his script, can only repeat the same memorized phrases.
That's what I was talking about, was Bush. He's not that good at it, at script reading or improvising either way. It's not one of his strong points. It's why he lost the debates.
That's right. He clearly did. In fact, I think they had to do a lot of damage control, to try to recover from that. They tried to minimize his contacts on an ad-lib basis, and they really had to work hard to recover from that.
It's just that, you know, in culmination, Joel, what I hear you saying is that our government is not just sort of a fairly benign, stumbling affair at all. It's our enemy. Our own government is our enemy.
Well, I'm not going to go that broad, Art.
Why not? I mean, that's what it adds up to.
I'm saying there are elements in the government, what we might call a dark side of government. I mean, we've known this has been for years, from the OSS to the CIA to the infighting between naval intelligence and OSS and CIA and FBI. I mean, there are dark side elements. I mean, look at the...
Man, it's not just dark, it's black. It's as dark as you can get to imagine that our own government would kill its own citizens. That's what it boils down to, our own government killing its own citizens. Isn't that where it goes?
Yeah, and the evidence points to the fact that our own government agents took out President Kennedy. I mean, they were the ones who covered it up.
Okay, hold it right there. We're here at the top of the hour. Joel Skousen is my guest. In the nighttime, we talk of things like this.
Now, if he can-